Side honor them crazy murderers would never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. You not I can just see, hoping up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right, in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Tuesday, December the 8th, 2020. You are listening to today's late edition of the Ugly Truth podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I had a slight approaching senior moment there when I couldn't decide whether I was going to say podcast or broadcast. Anyway, but I did get it right in saying that it is Tuesday, folks, and not Sunday. But despite the fact that we are 2 days late, nevertheless, here we are, as promised. Sorry, folks. Sunday, I had my head under the hood of three different cars that needed to have water pumps, starters, and alternators replaced. Kids that have to go to school and kids that have to go to work. When you have three cars that break down literally within hours of each other, there's nothing else to do except to get them up and running when kids have got schedules like that, and that is the reason why. We were not able to get together on Sunday because I was tied up all day doing that. And then I did try, folks. This is the fourth podcast that I have put together in the last 24 or so hours, but I just was not comfortable with the previous three. The brain was just not firing on all cylinders, folks. I'm sure all of us go through that at some point where we're just not at our in our top game, I think is the phrase that people use. Not at the top of their game, that's the phrase. And I wasn't, and you know that I inherited this very bad habit from our good friend Mike Piper, may he rest in peace, for being a stickler for details like that. I don't want to put something out there with as important as this information is right now. I don't want to put something out there that is half-baked. You know, it's like taking a cake out of the oven before it's done cooking, which you have on your hands is a disaster. And I certainly don't want to do anything like that. We've got too much of that going on in our world these days, and that's why we find ourselves in the mess that we're in. And nobody should make any mistake about the fact that indeed we do find ourselves in the middle of a very big mess. Let's see, on an administrative note, housekeeping note, I would like to send a very heartfelt thank you to the various people who have contacted me and expressed their appreciation. That's something that I've heard a lot, those two words, thank you, from quite a few people who are glad that I'm back doing this thing that I'm doing. And along with that, a handful of people who have sent over a few care packages in the form of American dollar bills to help offset the costs associated with putting this program together. I really do appreciate that quite a bit, folks, more than you can even begin to imagine. And on that note, if anybody out there would like to contribute anything, folks, it doesn't have to be a fortune, even as much as $5. $5 goes a long way towards keeping this little engine plugging along down the road, and if you would like to do that, you can email me at the Ugly Truth Radio Program. It's all one word, the Ugly Truth Radio Program at gmail.com, and I will set you straight. Another piece of administrative news, folks, is that for better or for worse, I have made the fateful decision to expand to double by 100% the programs. To 2 days a week. I anticipate, as long as everything remains stable in my world, of course, being here on Sundays as promised, and then sometime midweek, depending on the news and depending on how well all of those cylinders upstairs in my head are firing somewhere around Wednesday or Thursday. My feeling on this is that the information is just too important to only get together with all of you and to discuss it once a week. So I'm thinking now twice a week that we will be doing that. Hopefully, again, as I said, the caveat in that is that the world manages to hold together to some degree, which, of course, at this point in time is a big question mark, folks, big question mark. So let's see. As I said, the brain just was not firing on all cylinders. That, is, of course, assumes that I actually have more than one, since I did use the plural form of cylinders. I don't know. Maybe I've only got one. Either way, I was just the three programs that I had put together. I thought, you know what? I didn't particularly get anything out of doing it, and I'm sure that me having not gotten anything out of it, I'm sure none of the listeners are going to get anything out of it either. And so rather than waste an hour of your lives, 3 hours of your lives, I decided, folks, to just wait until, you know, things were, you know, all the circuits were working properly upstairs, and then to do the program again today. And so here we are, and I am feeling a little better about it. I think it's going to be okay. I think we're going to be able to put this one up. And as Mike Piper used to say when he was writing for American Free Press, he always said on Fridays, you know, when they were putting the paper together, by the time that they had finally finished everything, they had crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's and all the rest of that they had put the paper to bed. So hopefully here in the next, let's see, we are now 6 minutes into this. Within the next 54 minutes, because I do only want to, I want to keep these programs at around an hour, folks. I really can't do any more than that, and I wouldn't want you to have to lay aside more than that of your precious time to listen to me blabbering on. So nevertheless, here in the next 54-55 minutes or so, hopefully we will be able to put the program to bed, and you guys will all have something, a nice big fresh piece of meat on which to chew. Okay, so folks, the first thing that I want to discuss is once again, and by the way, for anybody out there who happens to be a new listener to the program and you're wondering, you know, what is that music at the beginning of the program? Well, that was the opening, and I believe it was the closing theme, if memory serves me correctly. That was the at least the opening theme of Mike Piper, his radio program that he did for 5 years, five nights a week for free. At the Republic Broadcasting Network. I have to bring that up, folks, that he did this for free, because I don't know if John Stadtmiller, who ran the network at that time, I don't even know if he is still alive, to be honest, because I'm so unplugged from all of that old business that I used to be involved in. But nevertheless, John Stadtmiller, who has something of a reputation for being a backstabber and somebody who, you know, will come up behind you and stick you in the back with a screwdriver, this is basically what was done to Mike after 5 years of doing his program. And as his health started to affect him, because he had heart problems and diabetes, and he had the neuropathy in his feet and legs that caused him a great amount of pain, John Stadtmiller just came along without even telling Mike ahead of time, canceled his program, gave it to somebody else, without even so much as a word of, hey, Mike, thanks. Thanks for all the time you put in to the programs. And remember, folks, for every hour of programming that you do, there are dozens of hours of research and learning and all of the rest of that that had to go into this. And so, so anyway, that was the theme song from Mike's program that he did. The Piper Report is what it was entitled. Was a great program. Just nothing has compared since. And dare we say nothing ever will, because Mike really was irreplaceable in that regard. And this program, given the fact that I worked so closely with Mike for many years, close to 10 years, given the fact that I worked as closely as I did with him, in fact, folks, it was after John Stadtmiller canceled Mike's program, that I immediately set up a new podcast website for Mike, and literally we were able to seamlessly bridge that gap that had been created by Stadtmiller's treachery. And Mike's podcasts were just fantastic. And on that note, folks, another piece of good news is that one of the listeners here happens to have all of Mike's old MP3 programs that we recorded together and that we had put up on the internet. I lost all of those when the usual suspects shut down the website. And so, but there was a good soul out there who obviously had enough foresight to recognize how important those were and how fragile the system is to get them, and he downloaded them. And so he's putting them on a thumb drive as we speak, and he is going to be sending them to me, and they will be going back up on the back up on the website. So anyway, bringing this thing full circle, as our good friend Mike Piper used to say, that was the opening song to his radio program. And given the fact that I consider the work that I do to be merely an extension of Mike's work, because Mike was my teacher, he was my mentor, he taught me how to view these things going on and to do so in a rational and methodical way, instead of so many of these other people out there who just shoot from the hip, and they don't care if it's right or wrong. They don't care if it can be substantiated with fact or reason or anything like that. They just throw it out there because at that particular moment it happens to sound good. And they, of course, you know, they appeal to plenty of other nuts of similar species who like the sound of it. Yeah, that sounds really good. Yeah, nobody died at Sandy Hook. There was no shooting. In fact, Sandy Hook doesn't even exist. In fact, the state of Connecticut doesn't even exist. It's a hoax. Okay. Yeah, folks, I know I'm being a bit facetious here and taking it to this, you know, way out into these realms where, you know, obviously it's an exaggeration, but I'm making a point here about what has unfortunately become of this. I'm not even going to call it a movement, folks, because it's not. I have decided to change the terminology involved in this and to call it, it is our struggle. And when I say our, I don't mean, you know, a whole lot of us. I mean very few, because most of what, as I've said before, and as I spent probably too long on the last program discussing, whatever this movement was, whatever you want to call it following 9/11, whatever it was and whatever it could have been, is not what it is now and probably not what it is ever going to be. I think that opportunity basically has been lost, and we'll be talking about that a little bit today. But the way that I choose now to describe this thing, at least as far as my involvement in it goes, is that it's a struggle. It's a war. It's a war for survival. It's not a movement. You know, a movement is like, I don't know, it's something really stupid, okay? It's stupid. And it's more often than not, especially these days, generally speaking, if it doesn't start out being the product of some plan hatched up by some intelligence service somewhere, it winds up being that way. Even if it didn't start out that way, it winds up being that way, and it just becomes like a field full of honking geese. Anyway, because of the fact that I worked as closely as I did with Mike for all those years, this is the reason why I have chosen to use his song as the opening, you know, the introduction and the closing to the program. And in that regard, I suppose that I can say that that these programs are, all of them, dedicated to Mike and to the irreplaceable work that he did for us in teaching us all how to think. It's not just the information that he uncovered. It's also, as I said, that he taught us how to think, at least some of us. A lot of people obviously weren't paying attention because they have gone off into these realms of stupidity that literally there's just no clawing back from it. And on that note, folks, dealing with the introduction, before the music, as important as that is, because it is a testimony and a reminder of Mike Piper, there's something even more important taking place, and that is that soundbite that I have elected to use in starting off the program. And that is a soundbite from a fellow by the name of Douglas Rushkoff, I believe his name is. He is of the Hebraic pedigree, as he clearly makes clear in that statement when he's talking about Judaism. And this is the thrust, the theme, and the topic of discussion of this program, folks, is that very thing, Judaism. Now, a lot of people wince when you say that, because we've been conditioned to do that. We have been browbeaten and we have been threatened. And those who have dared to wade into those dangerous waters, to some degree, have paid a price for it. And the reason why is because those who are the practitioners and the main beneficiaries of that ism, called Judaism, they don't want us looking at it. Okay, they don't want us peering too deeply into it. As far as they're concerned, the only role that we as those of the non-Hebraic persuasion are to play in all of this is just to either praise it or to leave it alone. But they don't want you peering into its inner secrets, because if you do, then you just might find something out about these people that is alarming, that is dangerous, that is threatening. Okay. Now, this is the only ism we're not allowed to look at, folks. We are allowed to look at anything. We can look at Catholicism. We can look at Islamism. We can look at communism, capitalism, socialism, conservatism, liberalism. Okay, all of those isms. But the one ism we're not allowed to look at, unless it's with adoring eyes, is Judaism. And yet, that is the primary thing. Primary thing that deserves 100% of our attention right now, folks, because it is these people, the followers of Judaism, whether they are religious or whether they're secular, and I will go into an explanation and a deconstruction of that here in just a moment, whether they are religious or whether they are secular, these are the people who are sitting atop the pyramid. And yeah, I'm talking about that same pyramid, folks, that you find on the dollar bill. That, you know, here's this big structure, and at the very top of it, separated from the pyramid, separated from it, I'm pretty sure it is another pyramid all its own. And that's the one with the eye in it. That's the one that's looking out everywhere, just like in Lord of the Rings. You know, I think that eye, that giant eye that was always looking for the ring, it was called Sauron or something like that. Let's see, I'm going to make sure that, yeah, it is separated. It's floating above it, okay? So it's these people sitting inside that little pyramid that sits on top of the bigger pyramid, okay? They're the ones making the decisions right now about whether we live or die as a civilization, as nations, as communities, countries, states, whether or not we have jobs, whether or not we find ourselves at war, whether or not we find ourselves dying of a pandemic, whether or not we find our economy crashing because of a pandemic. Who's going to be our president? Who's going to be our elected members of Congress? What color hair our kids are going to have? What kind of tattoos they're going to put all over their bodies? Not my kids, okay, because thank God my kids have not been permitted to go down that road. But nevertheless, when you look around at all these young people, folks, and you see what has become of them, you know, they didn't come up with these ideas all on their own. They came up with these ideas because they saw somebody else doing it, and ultimately it all went back to the same place, which was the mainstream media. What I refer to now is the mainstream media mafia. Now, back to what I was saying a moment ago about the practitioners of being Jewish, being religious, or being secular. Judaism, you know, this is one of the mistakes I think that people make in their understanding of Judaism. is that it does not require the belief in a God. There are strains of it where you have, the more religious elements who they acknowledge the existence of a God that favors them. Okay, whether that God's name is Yahweh or Jehovah or Hashem, that's one of the ones that you'll see used quite a bit if you read the Israeli press like I do on a daily basis. But then you have these practitioners of secular Judaism, even those who practice Judaism and who are atheists. But nevertheless, they still put the protocols of Judaism, which at its irreducible minimum is a tribal cult philosophy. And its aim is to propel the well-being of the tribe of Judah. That's why it's called Judaism, okay? And so you will find people who are atheists, but they still, to some degree, are practicing their Judaism. Because what they do, whether it's advancing the interests of the tribe or whether it's warring against those outside the tribe, meaning the Gentiles, they are still basically putting into effect, bringing about the intended end result of this particular ism. Now, this soundbite, and it's going to be a collection of soundbites today, folks, on today's program, because they're very illustrative. These soundbites are pure gold in that they are there as part of the permanent public record. And it gives you an insight into what kinds of, well, how the cylinders are firing in the heads of the people who are saying these things. And in this particular soundbite where this individual is talking about it, I mean, you know, think about exactly what he's, I'll tell you what, folks, we're not even going to think about what he's saying. First thing that we're going to do is we're going to listen to exactly what he says. And so let's just sit back here and listen for a moment.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right, in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
Okay, so there you go. That was our unesteemed Hebraic writer, Douglas Rushkoff, talking about his Judaism. And notice, folks, he's not saying Zionism. He didn't specifically mention the Talmud, okay? He's not talking about the Khazars. He's not talking about the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati, the Jesuits, the Black Pope, any of these things. Any of these things that have been put directly in our field of vision in order to distract us and confuse us from what the bullseye on the target is. And he lays it out there in just about less than a minute, less than 60 seconds time, exactly what the nature of the problem is. He says, you know, we are a corrosive force in that we don't believe in the things that the non-practitioners and non-believers of Judaism believe in. We don't believe in any of these gods and religions and ways of life that other people follow and practice. These are artificial constructions. Okay, and so he said, and then he says, and we're tearing down these things, these hallowed ideas and philosophies and religions of gods of all nations and all peoples because they're not real. Now, notice he doesn't say, when he says we, he doesn't say some of us. He says that everywhere you find somebody who is a practitioner of this particular ism, Judaism, that they are working to tear down, to act as a corrosive force in tearing down the gods, the religion, the philosophies, the political systems, everything that makes up Gentile society, north, south, east, and west, that they are working to tear it down. Now, this is extremely important for us to consider at all times, but especially now, folks, when indeed our world is being torn down in ways that none of us really, I think, have experienced, at least none of us living in America who grew up without living through war, living through privation, living through, you know, all of the other things that other people have experienced. Okay. And so the question that we have to ask is, okay, well, if indeed these people who do possess at least a controlling interest, that's the bare minimum we can say about it. It's actually, you know, and a controlling interest is 50 to 51%, but we know, folks, we know that it's much higher than that, okay, especially when it comes to the media, when it comes to our money, when it comes to influence and all of the rest of these things. Organized Jewish interests, not the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati, none of these things, okay? It's organized Jewish interests. It's the Jews. And we are hearing it right from what we would consider to be an authoritative source, somebody who lives that life, who practices that life, who proudly says that he's part of a group of people who tear down, who act as a corrosive force and tear down the things that are not true. Now, we're going to listen to another soundbite here, folks, and this one is of George Soros. George Soros is like Douglas Rushkoff. He is of the Hebraic pedigree, and please, no emails from anybody trying to school me on the difference between the Hebrews and the Israelites and the Jews and the Judeans and the Khazars and all of the rest of that stuff, okay? It simply doesn't matter, okay? A Catholic living in Rome, speaking the Italian language, is for the most part the same as a Catholic living in Paris, speaking the French language, and the same as a Catholic living in, take your pick, whatever country in the world, whatever language they speak, whatever race they happen to be, okay? The Catholicism is what makes the Catholic, and the Judaism is what makes the Catholicism is what makes the Catholic, and the Judaism is what makes the Jew, the Jew. So we're going to listen to this next soundbite, folks, and it is of George Soros. Yes, he is of the Hebraic pedigree. He is a fantastically wealthy financier, and his money has been utilized for the purpose of acting as that corrosive force that Douglas Rushkoff is talking about. His money has been used to foment color revolutions all over the world, and it has been used particularly in the last 5 years, first in trying to prevent Donald Trump from getting the nomination from the Republican Party, then being used to try and prevent his election as president, and then having failed in that endeavor, it has been used to turn the House of Representatives over to Trump's enemies, and then finally it has been used to try and unseat him with not only with the pandemic, the impeachment, but with the collapsed economy and a stolen election, and we're going to listen to him right now.
Clearly, I consider the Trump administration a danger to the world, but I regard it as a purely temporary phenomenon that will disappear in 2020 or even sooner. I give President Trump credit for motivating his core supporters brilliantly. But for every core supporter, he has treated he has created a greater number of core opponents who are equally strongly motivated. That's why I expect a Democratic landslide in 2018.
And there you go, folks. That was George Soros, a proud Jew. Couldn't consider himself to be a Jew, even though he at times espouses his atheism and all of the rest of that. But nevertheless, he is part, proudly part, of that corrosive force that is largely responsible for our world falling apart today as it is. Now, folks, I have a question that I'm going to throw out to all of you. This is rhetorical. You don't have to send me the answer. Actually, I'm going to give the answer, but I'm just asking the question so that as a way of setting up this discussion. If somebody like George Soros, with all of his money, and if, as he has just admitted, now this is before 2018, because he says that by 2018, you know, we're going to see the beginning of the end of Donald Trump, which means he's going to put his money into circulation in order to get certain people elected to the House of Representatives. Okay, now, folks, if George Soros, if he's doing these things, and if all of this trouble that this was causing for Trump personally, if this ran opposite to what somebody such as, say, Benjamin Netanyahu, to what he wanted with regards to the well-being of his country, Israel, the Jewish state, don't you think that Netanyahu would get a message to Soros and to say, look, Trump's my friend, and we put him in office, and he's doing everything we want him to do. He gave us Jerusalem, and he moved the embassy, the U.S. embassy, to Jerusalem, and he recognized the Golan Heights, and he's doing all these other nice things as president, and you're screwing it up by having his enemies take over Congress and run this impeachment against him and all of this other stuff that you're doing. Don't you think, folks, that if all of what we have been told by all of these, by the idiot brigade within the quote-unquote movement, how, you know, Trump is owned by the Jews, how the Jews love him, they put him into office, look at him shaking hands with Netanyahu. Don't you think that if all of that were true, that Netanyahu, with his incredible resources at his disposal, that he would get a message to George Soros to say, look, you either cease and desist with this, or you're going to be, they'll never find your body again. It'll be at the bottom of some large body of water feeding the fishes there. Of course he would, folks. Of course he would. As well as all of the other members of Congress, Gerald Nadler, who rose to be chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, where the entire impeachment business began. Gerald Nadler, of the Hebraic persuasion, represents the largest Jewish district in the United States. Don't you think that if what Nadler was doing, that Israel considered this to be against her interests, that Netanyahu would pick up the phone and he would call Nadler and he would say, cease and desist, or we're going to publish pictures of you engaged in some illegal sexual activity with a 12-year-old that we got our hands on 20 or 30 years ago. And likewise with Adam Schiff, head of the House Intelligence Committee, who ran all of this whole Russia and Ukraine investigation, and whose quote-unquote research and investigation was what led to the articles of impeachment being leveled against the president and voted on and passed. Don't you think that if Adam Schiff and Charles Schumer in the Senate and everybody else, whether they are of the Hebraic or non-Hebraic persuasion, don't you think that if Trump were protected and favored as much as we have been told he is, that somebody would have gotten the phone call? and yet they didn't. So what does this tell us, folks? This is very, very simple and elementary math, which is they wanted all of this to happen. Now, that's the most passive statement that we can make about this, that they allowed it to happen. The truth is, folks, is that they put all of it into motion, every step of it, 5 years worth. The neocons were screaming about Trump 5 years ago, as soon as he announced his intention to seek the presidency. And they have not let up on him since. Now, those of you who, for the benefit of those of you who are new to this program, and you don't understand what I'm talking about here, the neocons are the very same people who orchestrated the first Gulf War 30 years ago under George H.W. Bush, and who orchestrated the downfall of George H.W. Bush in the 92 elections to Bill Clinton, because George H.W. Bush refused to finish the job. He refused to follow through with what Israel wanted with regards to the complete obliteration and annihilation of Iraq. That's what they wanted. Israel considers the entire Middle East to be hers. But the only way that she is going to acquire this piece of real estate for herself is if through the process of creative destruction. You know, when you've got a really tough piece of meat, that unless you're going to cut it up into these tiny, tiny little pieces, okay, chances are you're going to choke to death on it if you try to eat it because it's too tough. So what do you do with a tough piece of meat like that? You run it through a meat grinder. Maybe once, maybe twice, maybe three times, so that by the time it makes its way to your plate, you don't even need teeth to eat it. And this is exactly what they have had in mind with regards to the Middle East for thousands of years, folks. Thousands of years. Now, having said that, George H.W. Bush, because he refused to go whole hog in the Israeli planned destruction of Iraq, they got rid of him. They destroyed the economy and made him one of the most unpopular presidents in history after he had been one of the most popular presidents in history because of this very quick and decisive war known as Operation Desert Storm. Same thing with Clinton. Clinton wouldn't go forward with what I theorize was the agreements that he made with the neocons when they offered to back his campaign. I haven't found the substantive proof of this plan yet, but it has to have taken place. Okay, investors want to know before they put their money into something what they stand to get on the return. Okay, so they had to have made a deal with Slick Willie during the 92 campaign. Look, we are going to get you elected, and we are going to we will do damage control on this long, long line of women and scandals and other criminal corruption and activity that you and your wife have been involved in for decades. We're going to run damage control for that. But in return for that, you're going to keep your nose out of any peace deals, and you're going to pick up where your predecessor left off with regards to this war in the Middle East. And of course, Clinton, being Slick Willie, after all, I'm sure that he said, absolutely, you can count on me. And then the first thing that he does after he takes office is that he does the exact opposite. He immediately picks up on the peace deal momentum that was left unfinished by his predecessor. Okay, strike one. And strike two is that he refuses to go along with the apocalyptic war that these pirates had demanded of him. And on and on and on, folks. Of course, George Bush, the little monkey in the White House, he gave them what they wanted with regard to at least most of it. He didn't give them Iran. Okay, this is where he, was dragging his feet quite a bit. He wouldn't give them Iran, but he gave them Iraq, and he planted the seeds for what would come later under Obama, which was the Arab Spring. And then we have Donald J. Trump, who announces, before he's even gotten the nomination, that when I become president, we're pulling our troops out of this mess in the Middle East. We're pulling our troops out, and I'm not interested in the project for the new American century. This is the group, the think tank that these neocons had created in between George H.W. Bush and Clinton in order to get this entire clash of civilizations going. Donald Trump's position is, I'm not interested in the project for the new American century. I'm interested in the project for a new America without these wars that the corrosive force have conjured up, the intended end result of which is not just running the Middle East and the entire Islamic world through a meat grinder, but the entire Western world as well. As we've discussed over the years, folks, 9/11, okay, happening on that specific date. They didn't just pick that date out of thin air. It has very deep symbolic and historic meaning to it. Because every year for the last 2,000 years, on the ninth day of the 11th month in the Hebrew calendar, ninth day is Tisha, ninth, and Bav, the ninth of Av. Av is the 11th month in the Hebrew calendar. That's the day that Jews all around the world, they kvetch and they cry over the destruction of their two temples. The first temple was destroyed by the Babylonians on the ninth of Av. And of course, Babylon is the modern day country of Iraq. And then the second temple that had been rebuilt by the Persians was destroyed by the Romans. And the Jews view the Western world today, folks, the entire Western world, Europe, America, everywhere that the Europeans have gone, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, everywhere they have gone, that's the modern day Rome. Not just the city of Rome in Italy, but the Roman Empire. And so they view us, Romans, the great-great-great-grandchildren of the Romans who destroyed their temple and destroyed their country and scattered them to the four winds and subjected them to thousands of years of persecution and all of the rest of that, that since, according to Judaism, the sins of the father fall upon the heads of his children and grandchildren, and I don't know how many, they have a specific number of generations that it goes on for. So because of that, folks, that's the reason why it's our job to bring them back and to be the instrument through which the entire Islamic world is run through the meat grinder. But see, it doesn't end there. As bad as that is, destroying the lives of 2 billion people around the world, the fact of the matter is that there were two temples that were destroyed. And just like as it was on 9/11, Tisha B'Av, the ninth day of the 11th month, the two towers of Western Roman American power were brought down, not one stone being left upon the other, as exactly took place with the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem under Titus. And Trump knows this, folks. Don't doubt for a second that he and the people behind him, that they know exactly what the nature of the game being played here is. Okay, it is mutual assured destruction, both on the Islamic side of the coin and on the Roman side of the coin. And this is the reason why Trump has made it as part of his platform that he is not going to allow this to happen. He's too invested in this. And I think, quite frankly, folks, I think he loves this country. And on that note, we're going to listen to what Donald Trump had to say. This was a... Now, folks, bear with me. I understand he's talking to Sean Hannity, who I can't stand as well. Okay, all of these right-wing radio hosts, Hannity, Limbaugh, even Tucker Carlson, I found out the other day, much to my disappointment, that he had some really nasty things to say about Iraq and about the people of the Middle East prior to the destruction of Iraq under George W. Bush. So I know all of these guys, okay, they were tentacles of the same neocon conspiracy to destroy Iraq and to get this clash of civilizations going. The same neocon conspiracy that today is seeking to destroy the person in the presidency of Donald J. Trump. Nevertheless, the fact that they have now seen the light and have had it explained to them, look, this is what you participated in. You have helped tie the noose around our necks, and now it's your job to go out and to remove this noose while there's time, if there's time. And so they will get points for the penance that they're doing now, folks, considering all of the damage that they did in supporting George W. Bush's war on terror, war against the Islamic world. But I want you to listen now to what Trump has to say. I know, it's Sean Hannity, but it is an extremely important, again, these sound bites are pure gold, folks, pure gold, because they give you a glimpse into the mental processes that are going on within the person who is speaking them. Now, you know, when Trump, early on in his first term, he had some things to say, and, you know, some of the smartest people within the idiot brigade, okay, were saying, that's it, they got to him, he's caved in, look what he's done, he's appointed this person, he's appointed that person, World War III is going to break out any second, he's going to deliver the entire Middle East to the Jews and give them everything they want, blah, blah, blah. Now, some of us, taking a cue from what we learned from our good friend Mike Piper, we weren't so quick to rush to judgment. We said, no, let's just wait and see what happens. Let's see if World War III does break out. You see, because we have conflicting pieces of evidence here, okay? Yes, Trump is saying these things that appear to be very supportive and very simpatico with Israel and with the Jews and all the rest of it. But yet, the same mainstream media mafia that is owned whole hog, I say that deliberately, folks, since our friends of the Hebraic persuasion don't like hogs. Since the mainstream media mafia is owned whole hog, lock, stock, and barrel by these people, then why all of the daily screeching? Okay, I mean, it's like that silly story out of the Old Testament of Joshua and his army of Hebrews or Israelites or Shebrews or Khazars or whatever we want to call them, about them marching around the walls of the city of Jericho, blowing their trumpets incessantly until the walls fell down, okay? One of their silly stories. This is, you know, people wonder how we got in the mess that we're in when you've got people who will believe nonsense like this. So some of us, we didn't join in on the screeching brigade, if for no other reason, folks, that at least as far as I was concerned, I was not going to stand alongside creatures such as William Kristol and Robert Kagan, Jennifer Rubin, David Froom, Max Boot, Elliot Cohen, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, all these guys who got the Iraq War started, the massacre, that black mass human sacrifice known as Operation Iraqi Freedom or whatever. I wasn't going to be standing alongside them screaming and complaining about Donald Trump But yet so many of our own people did. That didn't bother them. It didn't bother them for an instant that they were standing on the same side as the people who orchestrated 9/11 and who brought about this clash of civilizations. Anyway, we're going to listen to Donald Trump. It's in an interview, or actually it was a town hall meeting that he did with Sean Hannity. And in particular, this section dealing with his appointment of John Bolton, arch neocon, one of Netanyahu's best friends and one of his biggest and most important spies and operatives working in the United States. Big neocon. Let's listen to what Trump has to say, folks.
Let's talk about a second term. If you hear in 131 days from now, at some point in the night or early morning, we can now project Donald J. Trump has been reelected the 45th president of the United States. Let's talk. What's at stake in this election as you compare and contrast? And what are your top priority items for a second term?
Well, one of the things that will be really great, you know, the word experience is still good. I always say talent is more important than experience. I've always said that. But the word experience is a very important word. It's in a very important meaning. I never did this before. I never slept over in Washington. I was in Washington, I think, 17 times. All of a sudden, I'm president of the United States. You know the story. I'm riding down Pennsylvania Avenue with our first lady, and I say, this is great. But I didn't know very many people in Washington. It wasn't my thing. I was from Manhattan, from New York. Now I know everybody. And I have great people in the administration. You make some mistakes, like, you know, an idiot like Bolton, all he wanted to do is drop bombs on everybody. You don't have to drop bombs on everybody. You don't have to kill people.
If John Bolton, in fact, released classified material, should he be prosecuted?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, he did release classified. Actually, he had a judge said that they released the book early, so he couldn't do it. He said, this is very dangerous what you've done for yourself. And also, any money that you made, that's, you know, good luck. This was a very powerful opinion that we had. No, he's sort of a sick guy. There's something wrong with him. But I noticed that early on. He made two very bad mistakes. He made a mistake where he talked about the Libyan model. And I won't go to explain that, but some of you understand he was on Deface the Nation. And he talked about the Libyan model. I said, that's a disaster, because you know why. And the other thing, he said going into Iraq was a good thing. I said, okay, John, but now you know it wasn't, right? No, I still think it was. I said, so we're in for $8 trillion in the Middle East. And you think that was a good thing. And I'm pulling out. You know, I'm getting everybody out nice and easy. Everyone's going nicely, going nicely. You think it was good to go into Iraq, go into the Middle East? Yes. So those two things happened early in his little period of time. He was only there a short while. Once he said those two things, I no longer paid much attention to him, if any. But I'll tell you, he was good for one thing. Everyone thought he was crazy. Because all he wants to do is bomb people. You know, he'll fight Russia. Let's fight Russia. Let's fight China. Let's take them on at the same time. He's crazy. When I walked into a room with him, I knew that. When they saw Bolton, they always gave me what I wanted because they said, Trump's going to drop bombs on me. He's got this maniac with him. So in a way, he helped me in terms of a negotiation. But seriously, he didn't do a good job. He wasn't smart. He wasn't sharp. And he's the only man I think I've ever met. I knew him for a year. 1 year, whatever the time, it was short time. I don't think I ever saw him smile once. I said to him once, John, do you have a smile? And it tells you something about somebody.
And there you go, folks. That was Donald J. Trump, President of the United States, talking about... I always laugh when I listen to that interview because it really is kind of funny. Folks, I think it's because I married a New York girl, and you know, New Yorkers have just got a personality to them that is extremely unique and extremely entertaining. Okay, you're never going to be bored with somebody if they grew up in New York because they're just sharp, and you know, Trump, especially in that clip, I mean, it's funny. You know, the last thing that you expect to hear from him. You know, this man who holds the power of life and death over literally 7 billion people over the world, he says, you know, I never saw him I never saw Bolton smile. But that's not the important thing. The important thing is what the president had to say about his reason for bringing Bolton on board. Now, as soon as Bolton was brought on board, as I said, the idiot brigade went into immediate screech mode. This is the end. This is Armageddon, the apocalypse, World War III. Iran's going to be nuked. He's going to do everything Netanyahu. No. Trump tells you right there why he brought Bolton in. He brought him in because everybody knew that Bolton was crazy, that he wanted to drop bombs on everyone. And so this gave Trump, it gave him an edge when he was negotiating with people such as North Korea and with China, and I'm sure to a certain degree the extent of which we don't exactly know in terms of numbers, but with Iran as well. So having Bolton on board gave Trump a lot of leverage in negotiating these things that all were geared towards avoiding war, avoiding Armageddon, avoiding the apocalypse, everything that the neocons want, and which Trump is absolutely 100% dedicated to preventing. Okay, this is the reason that he brought John Bolton on board. It was a very smart move on his part. So, so this is where we are, folks. This is where we are. This is, as I said, and which is going to be the thrust of the discussions that are going to be taking place here. That corrosive force that we heard our unesteemed Hebraic writer, commentator discussing. This corrosive force that seeks to bring about World War III and Armageddon and all of the rest of this. And one man and whatever number of people he has standing behind him and helping him. That one man who's standing in the way of that, that is the reason why our world is falling apart. Literally, right at our doorsteps, as I warned, counseled, whatever word we want to use, 5 years ago. 4 years ago when Trump won, and I specifically told the listeners of this program, brace yourselves. And I said, you know, I try to stay away from, you know, telling people to, you know, stock up on food and take those steps that are necessary in order to weather whatever interruptions of services that may come from this. But I said 4 years ago, folks, 4 years ago, I said, it's going to be at our front doors. It's not going to be something you just read about on the news. It's going to be up. It's going to be in our faces, up close and personal. And on that note, folks, you know, a week from today is the constitutional deadline for the states to certify the votes for this election. And as it stands, as of this moment, right now, the president is not giving up. And on that note, and I'll try to make sure to add a link to the program today, please go back and watch the 45-minute presentation that the president did last week, where he is laying out the case for a stolen election, the election that just took place. He's not giving up, folks. Now, as I have been telling people, in fact, a good friend of mine who works up at the grocery store just up the road, we were talking about it today, and I was listening to Limbaugh talking about the court case that has been taken to the Supreme Court by the state of Texas. The state of Texas is suing the states of Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania. It's the four swing states. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's those four states. Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, and maybe Wisconsin, maybe Minnesota, I don't know. But it says four states who violated constitutional law in changing their voting process just for this election. And so this case has been brought to the Supreme Court. And my friend up at the grocery store, he says, did you hear the news about the lawsuit? Yeah, and I said, yeah, absolutely. I'm listening to this right now. And, you know, we always engage in some, I know I'm going to get him fired one of these days. We always engage in an extended political discussion whenever we run into each other. And I said to him, I said, you know, I've told my kids who are very upset over the possibility that Trump may not become president. I told them not to worry about that I was fairly sure, fairly certain, at least leaning in that direction by 51%, that he would retain the presidency. But that's not what we have to worry about. We have to worry about what's going to happen as a result of him holding on to the presidency. And I said, because this deep state that we've heard so much about now in the last 4 years, and which even now Limbaugh and Hannity and some of these other people who wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole as much as 10 years ago, they wouldn't touch that because they didn't want to be called kooks and they didn't want to be called conspiracy theorists and all the rest of that. And even though the rest of us knew, we knew about the existence of the deep state, even if we didn't use specifically those words, deep state. We knew that there was this thing out there, this shark underneath the waterline. This deep state is not just limited to the United States. The people running this deep state have been moving their pieces on this chessboard around for thousands of years. At the very least, folks, at the very least, since their country was destroyed by the Romans 2,000 years ago. But actually, if we want to be more precise in our historical understanding of it, for about 6,000 years, this deep state is worldwide. About the only place that we might not find this deep state functioning is in those locales where it's populated by nothing but penguins and walruses. Walruses, we're just going to say it like that. And so, having said that, my concern, and actually it's more of a worry than a concern, folks, because as those of you who know me know, I have a rather large family, 10 kids, wife and 10 kids, and grandkids and all of the rest of that. And, you know, any interruption in the goods and services of our modern world is going to make what is already a very heavy burden for me as a father much heavier. And given the fact that, as I said, this deep state, it's got its tentacles all over the globe, in every country around the world, means that we have to worry about what the Chinese are going to do. We're going to have to worry about state actors whose strings can be pulled at any moment to start blowing things up in America, to start riots. I said 2 months before the election, I was talking to my other friend who works at the grocery store and who's very political like me. And he said, what do you think is going to happen? This was 2 months before the election. I said, within 2 months after the elections in November, we will see tanks and troops in the streets because of all the unrest. And he said, well, why? I said, we're not even going to know who the president is. He said, do you think so? I said, absolutely. He said, how do you know? I said, because they're already telling us ahead of time. All you have to do is read between the lines, just like if you read between the lines following 9/11 and what the running dominant theme was 24/7, war in the Middle East, war in the Middle East, war in the Middle East, Saddam Hussein, Iraq, weapons of mass destruction, Islamic extremism, Islamic terrorism. Okay. When the drum beat is that steady and that loud for that long, it ain't hard to figure out where they're trying to go with this, what the tempo is that they're trying to create. And so, what I am concerned about, folks, what I am worried about is not that Trump is going to, is or is not going to be president. I'm worried about what's going to happen as a result of him holding on to the presidency. And I suspect that this may be exactly what these people want anyway. They want him to retain the presidency, at which point they are going to loose their dogs of war in this country, whether it's serious terrorist attacks, bombs, or the real virus, folks. The real virus, not COVID-19, but COVID-20 and COVID-21 and all of these other viruses that we don't know about yet, that they're just holding on to. Because I think what they want to see happen is for Trump or whoever to take the reins of a completely broken country. And while he is busy trying to quell the fires of unrest here as a result of him retaining the presidency, then the Chinese are going to do what they have been planning to do in the Far East for a long time, and the Israelis are going to do what they have been planning to do in the Middle East for a long time. And with Trump or whoever tied up dealing with the unrest that's taking place here, they're not going to have the resources or the attention to deal with the Chinese or the Israelis or whoever. That's what my fear is. And so, I guess since we're just about to close the program out here, folks, is for me to reiterate what I said to you 4 years ago, which is you need to buckle up and you need to take these things very, very seriously. Very seriously. Because if they're at your front door now, then it's not going to be long before they are in your house. These problems that are coming our way. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. Let's see, we went over an hour. That's okay. Again, my apologies for being a couple of days late on it, but my plan is that by January 1st, that we will be doing 2 days a week. That is assuming that there is a functioning system out there, and that you know, I'm able to continue doing this. You know, this type of thing. I fully expect that the same people, the same nice people who tore down 15 years of my work effortlessly 2 years ago, that they are just as ready, willing, and able to do the same thing today, or worse. So anyway, folks, we shall be together again, God willing, sometime here in the next 5 days, Sunday, hopefully. Until that time, keep your eyes peeled, keep your ears open, stay safe, stay sharp, and we will see you again soon.